Good morning, everybody. I think you've heard a lot of goings on in the control booth and here at in the inner sanctum. But this morning with me are artists of the modern age and graduates from the Pacific Northwest College of Art. Daniel Duford, a teacher at PNCA, and that's the Pacific Northwest College of Art, whose work, The Sleeping Giant, has been in the Merrillhurst Art Gym and is a teacher as well as being a sculptor, and a guy who can draw. He's a good drawer, which is close to my heart, as you know out there, if you've been listening to Art Focus for very many years. Anyway, he's brought with him two artists who graduated from PNCA last spring, Ryan Alexander Tanner and Alex Cahill are with me this morning. And, of course, we have Daniel Duford, who is a teacher at PNCA.
We didn't tell you this before the show, but also on Tuesday, there was a comic battle between comic book art battle between myself and Shamus Heffernan, who's a student who's also in the book, and I won. So I'm the reigning comic art champion at PNCA.
The reigning art champion.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That is good. Anyway, both these people are in the Pacific Northwest College of Art Comics Anthology.
That's right.
And Alex is a recipient, by the way, of the Zarek Foundation, and you got a grant.
Yeah, it's a self-publishing grant that they give out twice a year.
Yes, and you need to get your mouth right up next to that.
Yeah, the Zarek Foundation grant is they give it out twice a year to so-called promising self-publishers who they send in their book, tell them how much they need, tell them for what reasons they deserve it, and if they're lucky, they get it, and I happen to be one of those lucky guys.
Okay, and Ryan is the cartoonist at the Willamette Week, and you have a cartoon in there this week or every week?
Yeah, every week I have a, it's called PDX Exposed. It's like a, the format is it looks like a Polaroid, and basically it's all real life things. I go out every week and I find something to document, and I'm given one panel to, you know, reproduce it for an audience. Also, I do longer format things too, interviews, mostly with bands I've done the PGE story a few times too, comics about comics narratives for, you know, readers about that situation.
Okay, so keep looking around, because this trend to enjoy the comics and to understand them and is new. Really, and very exciting what is happening out there. And you should become familiar with it. And we're going to try to get you to be, we're going to give you some hints on how to become more familiar with this, which is not really a new trend. But the importance of comics is something you need to notice right now if you're interested in the arts at all. I don't know how to express this very well, but I think you can do better for me, Daniel.
Well, I earlier we were talking about the discussion of what comics are, and they are very much in the conversation in the fine art world as well as in the publishing world. And there's often seems to be a need to have an explanation before you talk about the graphic novel as a medium that's getting at other themes besides superheroes that has to then sort of explain this whole history. And I think one thing that we've often talked about, and a lot of people who are making comics talk about, is that if you can get past the content of what people think is a comic book, and actually think of the comic book as a medium the way you'd think of film. And so a film could be anything from, you know, American Pie to, The Godfather to a French film, so it's basically a French film, which is also actually exactly, I just did the same thing, but
way to go, Daniel.
Yeah, right. But you know, of some sort of it's a medium for telling stories,
right.
And the medium doesn't dictate the content.
Right.
The medium has mechanical functions and limitations, but it doesn't have anything to do with the content.
Right.
And so I think that's one of the things we've often talked about. Mm-hmm. Do you guys want to add anything to that?
I just wanted to simplify that into the fact that, you know, comics are just the messenger, not the message. And that's, I think that's really the heart of what we're getting at is, and I think Ryan wants to add something too.
Oh, also just, it's a struggle, I think, to deal with, like, vocabulary for comics is another thing. Like, we meet people a lot and they say, oh, you do comics. Oh, I'm sorry, you do graphic novels and things like that. And graphic novels kind of become this weird PC term for comics.
Yeah.
But it's a different format. Like,
yeah.
I'm holding up our comics anthology we made, and it's a comic book because it's bound with staples and it's flimsy. You know, it's not it doesn't have a spine like a
perfect bound.
Yeah, it doesn't have a perfect bound spine, which is the difference between comic books and graphic novels. Like, it's just hard to get people comfortable with what you're doing. You know, like they don't know how to talk about
right.
it.
You bring it up, and people just feel ill-equipped to handle it. They feel like, you know, is it called a panel? Is it a frame? Is it a cell?
Right.
What is it? And it's like, you know, just urging people to get past that. What the panels are called. You know, why it's bound that way. Why there are words or are not words. I mean, all that is, you know, they should just go with it and read it.
Yeah.
Can you describe what it looks like and tell us how much it cost and some of the statistics about this book?
The anthology.
Yeah, the anthology.
Uh-huh. It's $3.
Yeah. And it's actually, right now, it's available at three places, which is Bridge City Comics on Mississippi Avenue, North Mississippi, Reading Frenzy on Southwest Oak, and the PNCA Library.
Okay. Where does the money go?
Daniel's been keeping it.
Yeah, right.
He promises a pizza party. But
yeah.
That new wing on your house.
I do. I have a new wing on my house, actually, in a car, a Corvette.
Yeah.
The little money we get from it just goes back into hopefully doing another anthology.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Okay. A lot of people think comics are funny, but they don't really read them with their minds attached to the details. It's youthful people who do, who read them with some interest, but grown-ups are not. They're prejudiced against reading this kind of literature. What do you want to say about that?
About
it has an onus on it.
Well,
funny papers.
A lot of
funny
comics
papers.
Are funny, and I'm comfortable with that. That's fine, you know. But
why not? Yeah.
No, I mean, a lot of them are, and
that's cool with me.
Yeah, truly funny. Or a lot of them are funny with quotes, like the Family Circus is funny.
Yeah, right.
But that's also probably the most common forum for comics that anyone sees is comic strips in the newspaper.
Yeah.
Which is a really hard medium to do anything in, I think,
right.
You know, because you get four little tiny panels and you're, you know, dealing with the syndicate who wants marketable characters that look good on a t-shirt. And, you know, they're like, okay, you know, Garfield likes lasagna. Let's go with that for 30 years.
Right.
Yeah. So,
still good.
It's still good, man. Every time it gets me, when he kicks that dog off the table. But, so a lot of them are, and that's fine, but a lot of them aren't, too,
yeah.
And that's something to be aware of, you know. And you'll never see that in the newspaper, probably.
Right.
Well, there's, like, Rex Morgan, MD. That's not funny.
Yeah, and I think there's also, and this is, you know, a trend with certain artists who are getting a lot of respect now who recognize the visual language of, say, the Peanuts or the Daily Funny. And Chris Ware is somebody who has done this in a kind of hyper-stylized way, but they recognize that language, but they use it to do very poignant and kind of heartbreaking work. So,
right.
So visually, I think most people would look at it and associate that with there should be a gag or a punchline. But actually, they use that language to get at something very, very human and very, very poignant. One of the things that I think about with comics is sort of like poetry, and that it's a distillation of the language. So it takes something that's very distilled, and whereas it seems short and it seems quick, it actually, I mean, and you can give it a cursory glance, it actually can yield a lot more.
Right.
And then also, it can also just be a, it could also be a, a gag too, which is fine, you know.
Well, and the best ones historically, I think, have done both, like George Herman's Crazy Cat, which is about a mouse that hits that cat in the head with a brick every single time, but it also does a lot to play with language and composition and narrative in the backgrounds. There's all this like surreal landscapes and things like that happening, and that's you know, one of the great comics, you know, ever in our culture. And that's kind of taking that, this simple format or this kind of structured format, and just kind of going with it, using that as a springboard to do all kinds of things, you know.
And you want to name that artist again?
George Harriman did Crazy Cat.
Crazy Cat.
Yeah.
Yes. And he's mentioned by Sheldahl in his very important article in The New Yorker.
Those are being reproduced in collections that Chris Ware is actually designing the books, you know, the covers and things for those.
I remember that comic, that comic strip myself, yes. And I remember Max and Moritz, and they later became the Cats and Jammer Kids.
Right. Do you remember Gasoline Alley?
Yes, I do.
That's another one that's kind of being that and like old Charles Schulz Peanuts, the old ones. Well, you know, some people like the whole run, but those, Calvin and Hobbes is the most recent and actually probably the last great comic strip ever. That really used composition and, you know, strong narrative devices and imagination and things like that, and had really strong drawing, you know. Basically everything you see in the comic strips now is like, could just be stock images, you know. Like, it's my theory that there's, you know, 600 PDF files of Garfield and they just stick them in every time, you know. That there's no new drawings of Garfield, they're just reusing old ones. Yeah. I believe that.
Yeah, it might as well be true.
Yeah.
I don't like Garfield at all.
No. Garfield also is done by a committee of people.
I think he's watered down. He's not a good cat.
I didn't know.
There's like 15 people that get together and they make
So Jim
Garfield.
Davis is like a pseudonym or something?
I have to put my hand over
Garfield when I'm reading the guy that has the dog and the cat that argue.
Yeah.
Remember the dog?
Oh, yeah, Get Fuzzy.
I feel that way about the Family Circus.
See, I love the Family Circus, but it's because it's so bad.
Yeah.
I was actually had a whole conversation. We were looking at the Valentine's Day one, and it's the grandma's spooning pancakes, and the little girl says, "Grandma, can we have heart-shaped pancakes for Valentine's Day?"
Wow.
Yeah, it was innovative, you know. I was inspired.
I also just want to, getting back to that question, too, about the respectability or the perception of comics.
Which is just shot in the foot.
Right. You know, there's the Daily Funnies, and there's that association, or there's the New Yorker cartoon as another association, but there's also then comics as a culture is, in America, is linked with superheroes and superheroes
and
only.
Yes.
And funny, well, I was thinking as a, it's either the funny papers or the superheroes.
Right.
Where you have to go into a comic shop where, you know, it's a little frightening if you're not in the know and in the club. And so, there's that perception that is what a comic is. It's about either superheroes or it's like a funny daily.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's probably the most public version of the medium, but it's not the only. It certainly isn't its only potential.
It's not. That actually touches on something that I really wanted to get to, which is like I've spent the last couple weeks calling hundreds of comic book stores myself because I'm putting out a book in April, and I've been trying to figure out a way to you know, let it be known that I have this book coming out and it's going to be in this retail catalog in February, etc. And talking to each comic book store one by one and realizing just, you know, the kind of apathy and superstition that comes with comics not only being in those roots but having gone through this terrible crash about 15 years ago when the industry just ballooned because of, you know, Image Comics, and all of a sudden people were buying
the collector's
market.
There was comics number one sold for $100,000 and everyone bought 10 copies of whatever was number one.
Right.
And then everyone had 10 copies, so it was never going to be worth anything. Yeah, the whole industry crashed.
That's exactly what happened. It was just the speculation boom, and people were running off comics by hundreds of thousands, even millions, and they were selling that many. And then all of a sudden, it went pop. Mm-hmm. And so like a lot of comic book stores, I mean, even by 50%, maybe a little bit less, I mean, stores were closing, and stores are still closing because a lot of comic book stores were only looking to get in on that and get some of that sweet money that was happening, and people didn't know where it was coming from, but they just wanted as much of it as possible. Mm-hmm. And anyway, calling these people, they're so shy about that. They're so shy about making new movements and trying to pick up new material because they just never know, you know, what's going to put their overhead too high by trying out new material, and it's really sad.
You know, another person character that Michelle Dahl talks about is Crumb.
Right.
And Crumb had a big influence on comic strips. He was very much respected. And is he still working? Where is he still in Europe?
He's still in Europe, and he actually occasionally does a piece for the New Yorker. Actually with his wife, he and his wife often work on the same piece.
He's got a very interesting character.
Yeah.
And fearless.
Yeah.
For all his sort of dumpiness, you know, and the guy with the big shoes and the coarse language, talking about coarse language that he used. He was very good at characterization with Crumb.
Yeah.
One of the things he's responsible for, besides he's often credited with the underground comics movement, which is true, but I think just as an artist, what he did, and maybe almost at this point to a fault, he showed a couple things, is that comics, the language of comics, especially from the funnies from the 20s to the 50s, have a kind of surrealist, surrealist quality built into it.
Yeah.
And and you could use that to get at other things, you know, other kind of conditions of, in his case, boredom, sexual obsession, you know, what it's like to sort of be living in this, in a city at that time. So that combination of those two things is really interesting. And I think he understood, what the visual language is capable of. You know, it's seemingly simple, but it also has this, dreamlike complexity to it. Agree.
And I mean, yeah, he's one of the people that kind of single-handedly expanded, you know, expanded what people thought comics were capable of.
Right.
You know, like he started this whole genre of, that's another, probably in indie comics or whatever, the biggest genre is like, I'm a self-obsessed.
Frustrated loser comics.
Yeah, and I'm going to write a big book about it, or, you know, a bunch
of... 583 pages.
Oh, you didn't do that.
But you know what's interesting about that Sheldahl article? There's also a show up in New York right now called Nine Cartoonists, and it essentially has... What's happening now is there's a... what's happening, there's this kind of canon that's been formed. So when somebody wants to know who is now becoming interested in this a sophisticated... comic, they'll say, oh, there's actually, it's always these nine. It's, you know, Chris Ware, Charles Burns, Gary Panter, Dan Clowes, Art Spiegelman, R. Crumb. And so they're all great, but there's also, now it's becoming a canon, and I'm almost feeling like we're at a point now where we could move away from them a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
There's
a lot more
going on.
Well, the publisher, Fantagraphics.
Yeah,
I'm glad
right.
you said that.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you get these strong personalities and you're afraid to move away from them. And I think we are starting to shift to another way of thinking. We're using this more. It's being used more.
Right.
It's a special... new trend into human feelings. I mean, you know, you got to notice when the guy has a big tear rolling down his face.
Right.
Because he's lost a shoe or something and the shoe's being used to bash somebody. You know?
Right.
I mean, the activity, the human activity is more graphic now. And it seems to be people are taking it more seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we're all trying to explore, like, what you can do. I think we're all really steeped in the tradition of comics, though we were raised on comics.
Yeah.
But I think we're also trying to expand on that. Alex has been making these silent comics narratives, wordless comics. And his comics are very emotional or very much about a feeling or a state of being, which I think is really cool, admirable. And I mean, I think you can make comics that are using certain strategies that are unfamiliar, but they also have to be good comics, you know, like, by, you have to prove this by making good work. You know, I'm doing stuff for the Willamette Week and interviewing bands, and but the point to me isn't, hey, you can make a comic strip about a band. It's like, comic strip is a good way to talk about this band, you know, and so I have to try to back it up. It's not, to me, just a gimmick. It could really easily become a gimmick for the paper, you know, like, hey, people, a big argument for it there is like, hey, people are more likely to read a comic strip about a band than text because people have short attention spans and things like that. But to me, it's just another way. You can look at the band and you can kind of interact with them as they're talking to you with word bubbles or whatever. And to me, that's really powerful, you know.
Yeah.
Sure. I need to ID the station there. You're listening in to 90.7 FM KBOO, and this is Julie Bernard in Art Focus. And I'm talking this morning to Ryan Alexander Tanner and Alex Cahill.
That's right.
And
the reigning
Daniel
comic
DuFort.
Art channel. Reigning comic book art channel.
So carry on, people. I'm sorry I had to interrupt you.
I think just to summarize what Ryan was saying, I think we would all leave happy today if everyone just understood what the heart of what we're getting at, which is you can do any piece of art, and comics is no different, the best justice just by taking it for what it really is and not bringing to it, you know, what you think a comic book is or anything like that. Just read it and, you know, accept it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have just a few more minutes by my clock, but I would like to mention the other people who are the comic strip artists in the PNCA anthology. Would somebody like to do that?
Sure. You guys,
well, there's definitely the reigning art champion loser, Seamus Heffernan.
Right. Yeah. Who drew the cover? I inked it, but he did the pencils for it. Yeah, he's great. I mean, he needs to get
there's some
books
women
out
in there too, aren't there?
Oh yeah,
there's Gina Siciliano, who's a student right now, and she puts out. She has her own zine that she puts out, and then there is Rachel Mendez, who is the librarian and who was the one who helped. We all had a part in getting this together, but she's the one who really made the contacts with the printer and really shepherded the project through that way. And then Stephen Slappy, who is also a faculty member there, filmmaker.
And then we all kind of banded together to make this thing, and then we had it open for contribution.
Right.
And the only contributors we got were, we got I think, three submissions, and we accepted two of them.
Right.
And they're both Gulf War veterans, actually, and one is Will Campbell, who's a security guard at the school, and one is Jason Hoffman, who's a maintenance guy at the school.
Great.
Yeah, and I think they both did some really great stuff in here.
Yeah.
And I should also just say the project was supported by money from student council as well as the illustration department, and that's what kind of made the whole thing possible. So.
Very good. Yeah. Okay, I do want to say that KBOO has a program about cartoonists and graphic novelists, and one of the people here today, who was it that was on Conscious Show?
Oh, I was Ryan.
Brian. Ryan.
That's Ryan.
Words and Pictures is what it's called.
Yeah, I was on a panel with Mike Russell at the Stumptown Comics Fest, and it was broadcast about nonfiction comics.
Okay, we get Bill Dodge on there and Matt Clark, and their next show is Tuesday, February 28th at 9:30 a.m. for those of you who are interested in that. And any parting words?
Go ahead.
I love you.
That's a good one.
Thank you.
And again, I'd just like to say, if you want the anthology, you can get it at Bridge City Comics in Mississippi, North Mississippi, Reading Frenzy, or on Southwest Oak, or the PNCA Library.
And if you want the anthology or one of my books, either Something So Familiar or The Last Island, which comes out in April, you can also get them at Bridge City Comics or on 24th and Southeast Hawthorne at Excalibur.
Okay, and the catalog for Sleeping Giant by Daniel DuFord is available at PNCA.
Actually, at the Merrillhurst Art Gym.
In the Merrillhurst Art Gym. So check on all of those people. And I do thank you very much for coming this morning.
Well, thank you for having us.
It was very interesting for me, and we'll have you again sometime soon.
Sounds good.
Cool. Great, thanks.
Thank you. And this is Julie Bernard and Art Focus.
Allons dansons. Écoutez, répétez. Well, I love cubism. It's my favorite style. When I see a cubist painting, I just gotta smile. But there's one painter I'm his biggest fan. He's the father of cubism. His name's Cézanne. Cézanne, the father of cubism. Well, some people say that it was Picasso. Other people claim it was the Chirico. Some people think it was Modigliani. But they're all crazy. It was Paul Cézanne.
The preceding program was brought to you by was made possible in part by KBU Foundation members and a grant from In Other Words Women's Books and Resources, serving you from its new location at 8 Northeast Killingsworth at Williams. In Other Words is your local nonprofit feminist bookstore and resource center, offering community space, gifts, tools for the revolution, women's writings, and much more. Our number is 503-232-6003 or inotherwords.org. The following program has been made possible in part by KBU Foundation members and a grant from Oregon Children's Theater presenting the world premiere of The Giver, the story of a boy learning of the tragic sacrifices in his community has made for safety and security. The Giver runs March 5th, 11th, and 12th, 2 p.m. at Keller Auditorium, 222 Southwest Clay. Tickets at 503-228-9571 or Ticketmaster.com. Appropriate ages 10 and up. Information about The Giver at octc.org. Stay tuned for Democracy Now!